Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Unicus Radio Hour. I'm your host, Robert Stanley. All right. Despite technical difficulties, our special guest tonight from Australia is Max Egan, and his website is thecrowhouse.com. Max, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Robert. Thanks for asking me on.
Wow. Okay. My pleasure. And thank you for being patient with me through these technical difficulties.
That's so good.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about yourself. I know you're doing a radio show. How do people tune into that?
People can go to the AmericanVoice.com radio station. They can tune in on their dials in America, but I don't know what the number is. You'd find it on the website. You'll find a link on my website, The Crow House. If you go there, you'll see a banner that says "Join Max Egan on the American Voice," and you can get there. And you can stream the show from there every Friday night, or you can download the podcast from The Crow House every Saturday morning.
And oh, nice!
I do a YouTube clip with it as well, and that gets posted Saturday mornings as well. So, yeah, been doing that for about 5 or 6 years now, the radio show, and I've made probably 6 films and done a lot of YouTube clips and just been speaking out, doing the same thing you're doing, you know, trying to get the word out to people, wake the world up as we need to do. And
right.
It's been an ongoing thing. So yeah, it's all there on the Crow House. You'll find a link to the radio station. It's all there.
Yes, that's true. You can also, if anybody who's interested, please check out Max's website, thecrowhouse.com. And it's got a lot of information and very cool stuff here. I mean, you know, actually, I was looking at it earlier today. Some of the stuff that really caught my eye were these quotes from some very serious comedy. I mean, brilliant comedy from Bill Hicks and one of my favorites is George Carlin. I mean, this is just incredibly profound insights that these gentlemen are offering to us. Of course, they're both passed away. Unfortunately, we didn't have them around very long, but at least not long enough, in my opinion. I wish there was more people like that on this planet.
Oh, absolutely. Look, George Carlin was a genius. He was an absolute genius with his social commentary. Very outspoken with what he said, and he really hit the nail on the head so many times. He took a critical look at society, and he really turned it on its head and presented it for what it was. And it takes a real genius to be able to do what he did and deliver it in such a way that people would look at it and laugh at the ridiculousness of the whole thing. But really, when you look at all his material, all of his recent material was based on social commentary, and even a lot of his early material was based on social commentary. And he was an absolute genius, and people really, really do need to listen to the underlying message of what he was trying to say. And you can tell that he really loved people. With all the stuff that he said and all the way he put people down and put society down, you can tell that he did it because he really loved mankind. And he was very struck by the tragedy of the human dilemma, and that's why he did what he did. And I absolutely adore the man. I think he was a genius.
Yeah. I just wish he was still with us. And, well, at least his thoughts and deeds are still with us, and I guess that's about the best that we can say about anybody, right?
Well, yeah, he's immortal now. He's definitely left a legacy behind, which is what we're here to do. You know, we're here to leave the world better or different than how we found it. You know, that's what I believe anyway. You know, it's what you do with the time that's given to you here. And he's certainly left a legacy behind for future generations. And I think that in future, people are going to look at him. He'll go down as one of the, if not the greatest comedian in history, simply for his social commentary and his intellectual prowess. He was amazing.
Yes. Well, so how is it that you got started in the work that you're doing? I mean, was there a turning point for you, or have you always been awake and aware?
I've always been pretty well awake and aware, enough not to want to participate in society very much. I worked as a musician for a long time, doing front of house engineering and playing guitar, and just always cruised around on the outside of society. And never even wanted fame or fortune from music, just wanted to live outside of society. I loved playing guitar, and so that's what I used to do, and so I used to get paid to do what I love, and that was great. But I never wanted the fame, never wanted to be a rock star, and never wanted any of that sort of stuff. Just wanted to disconnect from society. And so I did that for most of my life, and I researched on the side. I was, you know, always into the spy novel and the conspiracy stuff, you know. Just
yeah.
want to know what happened, UFO research, all of that sort of stuff. Started off researching ancient history when I was a kid, when I was about eight.
Yeah.
I found out about the pyramids, and I was hooked right from there. I just wanted to know how they built those things, you know. So that kind of led me down that path my whole life, and it was kind of a hobby. And then, like so many others, when 9/11 happened, the hobby turned into something serious. I thought, well,
I see.
This is the big event we've been waiting for. This whole, you know, Illuminati, the whole shadow government, all the stuff that we know about. We've been waiting for this big event that they're going to have to usher in this big final war to lock down humanity. And then 9/11 happened, and I thought, well, hang on, this is serious. This isn't just a spy novel. This isn't just a hobby. This is the future of mankind. This is history in the making. And we're all participating in history. We forget that we're part of history. Here I am looking at all this stuff through history, trying to figure out what happened, and I'm not realizing that I'm part of history right now. We're making history. We are right now at the one of the most pivotal points in history. This is the event we've been waiting for, and so I suddenly put music on the side, and it became my hobby, and my research became my main forte, because I realized the need to get this information out to people. So that's what I started to do. I thought, well, you know, I've got to do it in a way that people understand that I'm doing it because it needs to be done. I'm not doing it for money or anything. So I put it all out there for free. I make the films for free. I wrote the book on ancient history. I put that up there for free, because I figured if people would understand that we've been lied to about every aspect of our history, perhaps they'll understand that we're being lied to about everything else as well. You know, so it kind of starts there. You know, why would they lie that? Because that's when I started looking at ancient history. The big question to me was, why did they cover all this up? Because obviously they must know. If I can figure this out, they can figure it out. They're not stupid. You know, am I to think that the academic world is so profoundly stupid that they can't see all this stuff that's right in front of their faces? Of course not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they covered it up. So why? Why did they cover it up? Why are they so intent on hiding our history from us? Because they don't want to know what we're capable of. They don't want to know what our true power is. They don't want us to know, you know. And there's a reason for it, because they're shaping us. They're molding us. They're turning us into something else. They're turning us into something controllable. They're changing the whole human race, changing the human race's way of thinking, changing their relationship to the earth, changing their relationship to themselves. They're completely remodeling mankind. So we need to pay attention to this and look at where we're being led. And that you know, it became necessary to speak out. So that's what I started to do. And that's been my main forte ever since, really. I've been doing it for quite a while. And I've been doing the radio show for 6 years now, which was amazing. It just kind of got dropped in my lap. And so, yeah, so that's what I've been doing.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I noticed that you did a conference in Egypt. What was your take there? I mean, did you ever figure out who built the pyramids and why?
Well, I think the pyramids were poured, actually. I think that they were not carved stone. There's actually texts that exist on Elephantine Island, I think. That,
right.
That show, there's a stela called the Famine Stela, and it shows you how they did it. It shows you how you can mix certain aggregates together and get the limestone from the Giza quarry and dissolve it in water and mix it with shells and certain minerals, and you can create this limestone and pour
right.
it, basically. And that it shows how they did it on this still. They tell you how they built these three monuments. And, you know, modern academia looks at that and says, oh, this is just theory and conjecture. This is nothing real. This is just mythology, you know.
Yeah.
It's right there. They tell you how they did it, you know, and you go and look at it. You look at the pyramids and you see that there's these fine stones and fine bits of shell in there.
Yeah.
It's everything that's written there that you'd use to make this limestone. And limestone from the Giza quarry is actually water soluble. So you can make this stuff. Of course, you're not allowed to take any of the limestone away from the quarry for testing, because it's all part of an ancient historical site, you know. So we'll let you do that, but they were poured. I firmly believe they were poured. That's how they did it. That's how they got them so perfect, you know.
Sure.
Why they were built, I mean, I can only speculate on that, and I haven't made up my mind on any one reason. There's all sorts of speculation on the purpose that the pyramids you know, what their purpose was.
Yeah.
I can still only speculate. So, I mean, there's no point muddying the waters now. There's thousands of books out there on people speculating on what they were for. I firmly believe they were an energetic device. They were an energy device of some kind. Whether yes. it was electrical energy or whether it was etherical energy or what is open to debate again. But simply because of the measurements and all of the information that's contained in the pyramids, I don't think that they put that information there simply to show us how smart they were, give us all the calculations of the solar system and all that sort of stuff. Because this is all in the the sides of the pyramid aren't flat. They've got little dents and all this sort of stuff. So when you take all these measurements of these dents and things, this is where you get all of this astronomical data from. But the pyramids themselves were covered up in limestone, and all of those dents were covered. So when they were a finished product, just sitting there as the finished pyramid covered in limestone, they were smooth. None of this information was available. It wasn't until the limestone casing came off that that information became available. So I don't think they put that information there for us to know that they were that smart. I think they put it there because if you are creating an energy device, when you consider this is an energetic universe, this is an energetic reality, this is an energetic solar system, and this entire solar system functions to very, very precise celestial mechanics, if you were going to create an energy device that you wanted to affect this reality, because this is an energetic, mathematically based reality, based on sacred geometry, would not that energy device need to incorporate all of those calculations and all of the aspects of this entire solar system and all of those celestial mechanics into that object for it to function in order to affect all of those things? And that's what I think the pyramid was, something that was energetically based. I believe there were crystals involved in the pyramid. I think that's what was in the ascending chamber. There was probably crystal or golden capstone or something like that.
Yes.
And it had all of those calculations and measurements in there because that is the mathematical calculation for this entire solar system, all contained within that device. Then they covered it up with smooth limestone, and who knows what it was actually for. But because it contains all of those calculations, I would say that it's an energetic device somehow related to sacred geometry, celestial mechanics, and the entire energetic nature and the fabric of this reality, really. Now, I don't know what it did, but it's certainly got some interesting things going on with it, that's for sure.
Well, have you ever been in there when the stone box is struck with a mallet?
No, I've heard that it rings like a bell, though.
It does. I was there when I was a kid, and man, that was bizarre. Utterly bizarre.
Yeah, well, it was never a tomb. There was never a body found in it anywhere. And it stands to reason that it served a completely different purpose to that. I mean, why would that ring that way? Why would that be carved out the way it is? I mean...
Yeah. And there was no lid found either. Or I mean, they didn't break in there. They had to break in, Max. I mean, they didn't even know how to get in there. They could get into the lower chambers. That was known for quite some time, and I believe they did some initiations in there. And I'm talking about not just the so-called Egyptians, but that place has been overrun by different groups of people for eons. And they obviously knew nothing about the pyramid because they had to break their way in there in 820 AD.
To the upper chamber,
I'm talking about. Yeah.
Exactly. They blew a hole in the side, found the passage, and found their way in. Got in there and found this sarcophagus or this big stone thing, and it was completely empty. And I thought they were going to find all this treasure, but they had to literally crawl through these tiny little passages. You know what it's like to get in there? Tiny little passages. You're crawling on your hands and knees on your belly to get through.
Yeah.
And then you get to this chamber and there's nobody there. And they had to, like you say, blow a hole in the side of the pyramid to get in there. And because they found no sarcophagus and no treasure in there, you know what their excuse was? You know what they said? Grave robbers.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, sure, grave robbers. Did. Somehow the grave robbers got in there. They took all the treasure. They got it out these little tunnels that they had to crawl on their belly to get out. And then they covered up the hole on the side where they got in so that nobody would know that they'd been there.
Well, they also had to break into the so-called king's chamber. The upper chamber was sealed with those incredible locks. I mean, those stone blocks are just the fact that they would seal it that well shows you that there was something in there that they didn't want people to, the average human, to be tampering with. I understand that there was also one of those stone boxes in the lower chamber, what they call the Queen's Chamber. Again, although there was no queen or any kind of royalty found there, but they supposedly had two of these boxes for whatever reason. Now, clearly they resonate, and I remember Tesla had built something, a very tiny device that would create a resonance that could literally tear down an entire building. So if they had something like that inside the pyramid that was, let's say, for example, you're right, there was a piezoelectrical crystal. If it was being resonated or pressure was being put on it, that thing could have been pumping out a tremendous amount of electricity, much like what Tesla wanted to do at Wardenclyffe. It could have literally been a wireless energy transmitting device, for all we know.
Well, it could have been. An interesting thing as well is that there's an aquifer below the pyramid.
Yes.
Which is exactly the same as the aquifer that was below the building where Tesla, he built that big device and he blacked out that village. I can't remember the name of the town. Remember, he built a device outside of a town and he started it up, this lightning type machine.
Okay.
And it blacked out the whole local town.
Was that Colorado Springs?
It might have been, yeah. It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, because there's
an aquifer beneath that, where he built that barn, where he had that device, uh-huh. which is exactly the same as the aquifer beneath the pyramid.
Yeah.
So it's very likely that it was all connected, you know, to this earth energy stuff that Tesla knew how to access. So yeah, it stands to reason that it was some type of energy device that was based on celestial mechanics, based on the sacred geometric principles of this reality. Whoever built it knew exactly what they were doing. And we just thought, oh, no, it was built by this civilization to show us how clever they were and leave all this stuff there to show us that they knew all this information. Well,
right.
I thought that for a while as well, but looking at it further, realizing that it was covered in limestone, I don't think that's what it was all about. I think it was absolutely an energy device of some description. God knows really what for. I mean, you could speculate on all sorts of things, but all we can really do is speculate, you know.
Well, I mean, there's some, like you said, though, there's physical evidence too, like the shells and the lime, which is part of cement. We know for a fact that they did things that we thought were carved. Let's say vases we thought was carved stone actually was exactly what you said. It was an artificial stone, like cement. In fact, they used a very fine type of cement to seal all those things, all those blocks together. There's no space between the blocks because they used a cement that's actually finer than Portland cement is actually inferior to what they were using back then, whatever it was.
Yeah, well, see, if you poured them a block at a time,
yeah. You
know, they'd just sit on top, wouldn't they?
They would just kind of merge to one another. Yeah, 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 because all you would be doing is making the forms, and that way they didn't have to It makes a lot more sense, actually. But
exactly.
Still,
I mean, there's the big granite blocks in the middle.
Those are amazing.
King's Chamber and stuff. There's still a lot of amazing stuff about it. So it doesn't detract from how amazing the thing is, but the whole concept of slaves dragging blocks across the desert on date palms—I mean, forget it. It's not.
Yes,
possible, you know?
And or up ramps that were greased. I mean, because seriously, that becomes logistically it becomes an absolute. I think it's just impossible. I just don't see how that's even. I can't buy it. I just don't buy it. It doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it's not possible. None of the main reasons or none of the accepted possibilities for how it was built hold any water at all. None of them are possible.
Yeah. Well, now I've only been to Australia once when I was younger, and I was on the coast. But I am kind of fascinated by the Aborigine people. Just curious, because you're there, what is your take on them?
Wonderful people. Very connected. Still very, very connected to the earth. Truly wonderful people. You know, they've been brutalized by our culture. They don't handle our culture very well at all. They don't handle alcohol well. They don't handle Western food well. Does things to them. And and because of that, they've been given a bad name. You know, but it's poison to these people. You give them alcohol, it's poison. It's white man's poison. It doesn't work with their metabolism, and it turns them into, you know, it's kind of like what it did to the Native Americans when you arrive with alcohol. It messes with their biology. They've lived here clean for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And then we suddenly come along and give them this poison that we've been consuming for centuries.
Yeah.
And it really messes with them, you know. But,
yeah.
But as a people, they're a wonderful, connected people, really, really connected to the land. They really respect the land. And
yes.
I've got some wonderful Aboriginal friends. They're among some of my dearest friends. So, yeah, I think imagine. Wonderful people.
Are they starting to be treated more equitably now?
Look, the government makes great steps to say that they are, but Australia is a very racist country, basically. It is. It's a very racist country. It's very a white supremacist country, unfortunately. There's a lot of white people here, man. You don't see a lot of colored people in Australia. You see Aboriginal people, but not many of them. They're out in the out in the country and out on the reservations and wherever they up in Broome and where the Aboriginals are we keep the Aboriginals in the Northern Territory and places like that.
Where you keep them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you walk around the Gold Coast or Brisbane or you might see one in 100 people is black or one in 50 people is black.
Yeah.
You go to Europe, you go anywhere, and there's multicolored people everywhere. But in Australia, it's just, there's a lot of white people.
And right.
They say that they're not racist, but I just say, well, that's fine. Where's all the colored people? I can't see any. When I go overseas, I got all my Arab friends, I got my South American friends, my Jamaican friends, I got my Negro friends, I come to Australia and I got to go and hunt out my Aboriginal friends because they don't come to town much because they give them a hard time. So, it's just a racist country and that's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm just curious because, I don't know if how close you're paying attention to what's going on here in America, but we have been I find racism has not disappeared. In fact, it seems to be part of another wedge that's being driven to divide and conquer mankind, not just a race, but the human race.
Absolutely. It's played like it's a tool in the United States. I mean, they play it to the hilt. They tell you that they're not racist, and then they act racist in every possible way. And you find that all races are racist. You find that black people are as racist as white people.
Well,
of course. It's just everybody's racist against everybody else. It's ridiculous, and it's a program. They're all running programs. It's just fiction. It's illusion. There's going to be a time when we look back in history and we think how ridiculous it was to even judge people by the amount of melanin in their skin. What is this about? It doesn't make sense. They're all people. It doesn't make sense at all. I just don't have a racist bone in my body. I mean, when I was a child, I had one of my best friends, actually my first best friend, was the first week I went to school when I was 5 years old, and I met this little girl, and we became the greatest of friends. And I ended up getting beaten up at school because I was friends with this little girl, and my mother didn't want me to see this little girl, and all sorts of stuff. And I couldn't figure out why. We were great friends. Her family was great. They were wonderful people. And I just loved them, And it wasn't until years later that I figured out she was black. It wasn't until I was a teenager, and I was thinking about it one day, and I went, wow, Helen, she was black. She was Indian or Negro, or she was from somewhere. She had dark skin. That's why everyone gave me a hard time. But I didn't notice. When I was a kid, I didn't even notice that she had dark skin. It took me until I was a teenager before I figured it out that was what the problem was.
Because
when you're a kid, you just don't see it. You see the eyes. You see the soul. You see the person. You see the real individual in there. You see the real human being in front of you.
Yeah.
And so racism is taught. It's a program that people run. They're trained to be racist. If they were left to their own devices, it wouldn't exist. I firmly believe that.
Oh, I'm sure you're right about that. In fact, I think when the world was tribal, that there was a lot more cohesion. In fact, I know there was. There was a lot of intertribal marriage. It was a way of keeping things strong. And I'm not saying that things were perfect. I know that they had disagreements a lot of times, but my understanding about marriage and adoption across between tribes was it was intentional as a way of keeping the gene pool strong and also socially bringing people together that way.
Yeah, of course, keeping peace between the tribes. And yeah. Of course, you know.
Mm. Well, anyway, the thing, I'm very optimistic, despite all the nonsense that's going on, and it's looking more and more insane. It's just when I see the politicians in Washington, D.C., having their little wargasms about, the latest, greatest rationale for murder, because that's what it is, murder for hire. I mean, it's an industry, but it goes deeper than that. I don't know if you've ever looked at my books or my website about Washington, D.C., Max, but it's something that I got involved in 8 years ago, and I know that there is a demonic or satanic element that is prevalent in that city. It's obviously not the only city, but it is a stronghold for the dark forces. And they do sinister things in the name of national security. And it's horrendous. It really is. And I think people are starting, at least the people I'm in contact with through this program and my website, they know, they can see through it. They know what's going on, and they're not fooled. And at some point, I do see it's going to end badly for the parasitic politicians of Washington, D.C. And I know that's why they built all their little deep underground military bases where they can supposedly hide, or off-world, whatever. But actually, there's no place to hide. Judgment, you can't hide from yourself. I mean, and Judgment Day will come. I'm not saying in a Christian term, but ultimately there will be a day of reckoning for I mean, like karma. It's just, I would not want to be in their shoes, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, look, there will come a day of reckoning for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, you know, the day of reckoning may be delivered to the people of the United States before it goes to them, because the people of the United States will catch the brunt of whatever is being delivered to those people. And it's really unfortunate to see what the United States has become. It really is, because the veil of secrecy has, you know, at last come down. And what we see is that, you know, the United States, for all of its pretenses and for all the good nature of the people of the United States, it's the biggest rogue element in the world today.
Right.
Militarily, it's caused so much war in the last 60 years. It's caused so much death and destruction, all in the name of making peace, waging peace around the world.
Waging peace, yeah.
Yeah, waging peace, you know, we're going out, we're bringing down nation after nation after nation, and we're covering the world in depleted uranium. We're selling faulty technology to the world that's causing things like Fukushima.
I mean,
doing everything we can to support the economic model and the ghastly specter of capitalism and corporatism, you know, and this is the result. And, you know, the people of the United States really need to wake up to the fact that you've got a criminal cabal that's running your country, and they are doing an enormous amount of damage to the world. And the United States is fast becoming, in the eyes of the rest of the world, it's fast becoming the biggest rogue nation on this planet. And when the world decides to retaliate and to stop the United States doing what it's doing, it's going to be the people that cop the brunt of that. Unless they stand up and rein their government in and make these people accountable, hold these people accountable, you've got to stop waging these wars. Going into Syria. Syria is so obviously a false flag. And there's been so much evidence to suggest that the gas attack, or the gas, not, it wasn't even an attack, it was simply an accident that happened. And it was the rebels who did it with Saudi-supplied gas. You know, full financed by the United States. I mean, we don't even have a rebel uprising in Syria. What we have are Al-Qaeda-backed terrorists being smuggled in through Turkey using Saudi weaponry that is all financed by the United States, that is designed to undermine the stability of that country. And there was even a memo that was released or leaked in January that suggested that the United States was prepared to stage a false flag chemical attack in order to invade Syria. This was in January.
And then
the United States, Obama just says, oh, by the way, in the middle of a speech, oh, by the way, we think this and we think that and blah, blah, blah. But by the way, if you happen to use chemical weapons, we'll have to intervene. Oh, look, right on cue, there's been a chemical weapon attack. We're going to have to intervene. Now, why would Assad use chemical weapons after the United States just said they'd intervene if he did? The only people that would use chemical weapons would be someone who wants the United States to intervene. And this would be the rebels, because they're Al-Qaeda, United States-backed rebels. And what is the United States doing backing Al-Qaeda and overthrowing this country? Isn't Al-Qaeda a terrorist organization everywhere else they are? But then suddenly if they're in a place where the United States wants that government overthrown, they're the good guys. What's this all about? So people need to pay attention to what's going on here. You've got a criminal rogue element that has taken over the government in the United States. And if you really look at it, what's going on in Syria, it's about banking, it's about resources. And the biggest resource is the people of Syria. The biggest resource in any country is the people. Even if it's gold or oil or fuel or whatever's there, it's the people that get it out of the ground. The people are the resource in every country. That's the biggest resource on the planet. And Syria doesn't have a central bank. And so this is why they're going in there. This is why they went into Afghanistan, why they've gone into Iraq, why they've done Libya, and now they're doing Syria. It's about banking. It's about resources. So you've got a criminal cabal puppeteered by European banksters that's running the United States, and it's being used as a rogue element that is waging a military campaign against the rest of the world. And these wars are not nation building. They are not to protect or preserve freedom. They are about death and destruction, basically. That's what these wars are about. They're not to protect anybody. And you guys have got to deal with this because, as I said, if you don't, eventually the world's going to say, look, we've had enough. Yes. And then it's going to come down on the American people. They're going to say, well, you were the ones who let this happen. You elected this government. You let this government do what it did. They don't understand that the American people are so brutalized by the U.S. propaganda machine, which is so powerful. And they honestly believe what this corporate-controlled media tells them. They believe that the good guys and their government are doing a great thing to go out and help the world and deliver freedom and democracy to the world. But they're not. Yeah. It's just waging war, and you need to pay attention.
Well, the other thing is that we're all under surveillance. So it would be very difficult to organize and dismantle what has been established, and I knew Eisenhower could see it coming. He already knew back in the 50s. He was trying to warn us, but I don't think he was specific enough or alarmist enough to really garner any kind of action or support to here in America. That probably would have been a better time to do it back when we were at – but, you know, the thing is when people are fat, dumb, and happy like that, they don't really want to change course, and it probably is going to take a catastrophe here before people are going to. And it's already slowly happening, the way they're dismantling the country and devaluing our currency. And every chance they get, it seems like there's more and more regulations being heaped up onto us. I mean, ridiculous 2,000-page bills passed. A lot of times they don't even know what's in it, but all they know is that they have to pass it because they're scared. They know that if the people wake up at any point, there's going to be an uprising, and they're all going to be removed from office, to put it politely. And so they don't want to let that happen, and that's why they obviously keep very close tabs on everybody, because no, of course we're not all terrorists, but are we enemies of the state?
Well, of course, everybody
potentially,
everybody's a potential enemy of the state. Anybody who wants freedom is a potential enemy of the state. Anybody who questions the actions of government is a potential enemy of the state. That's why they've got all the FEMA camps. But they'll just slowly squeeze society. They'll keep raising prices. They'll keep introducing laws. They make it possible for anybody to break a law at any moment of the day or night without even realizing they're doing it. You know, because they create so many laws that you don't even know you're stepping out, crack on the sidewalk. Oops, there's a law against that, I can't pay that $10 fine, so you're going to have to go to jail. You've racked up a lot of them now. We're going to have to give you a week in the slammer. And once you're in there, it's a privately run jail. Oh, look, you abused a guard while you're in there. We're going to have to keep you in there for another month now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just keep pushing you and keep pushing you. So it turns the whole human experience into a commodity. And if you're not working and doing what the banksters need you to do, well, they'll put you in the jail system. They'll get you making number plates. They'll get you making something else that they need for the system. You know, they'll treat you like a slave. And it's privately run, so they keep you in there as long as they can. It just turns every part of your life into a commodity. It's all about commerce. They feed you food that gives you cancer. Then at the end of your life, they say, oh, you need chemotherapy. You can't use hemp or anything like that cures cancer. No, you've got to have chemotherapy, which kills you. And it's really expensive. So we'll take all of your savings that you've collected during your life while we give you this treatment that's slowly killing you. Then when you've run out of money, we'll just let you die. Now you've got nothing to pass on to your kids. So they've got to enter straight into the workforce because we've just taken your life savings at the end of your life with this cancer treatment that we've given you to kill you from the cancer that we gave you.
Yeah.
You see, this is the way they run it. This is what the human experience has been reduced to, because the whole human experience has been reduced to commerce. It's just a factory. They sell you food to make you sick. They give you treatment that makes you sicker. Then they take you at the end of the life. They train you to, you know, the whole nuclear family that we've got in Western culture. The kids are 18. Yeah. Throw them out of home now. Get them on the economic treadmill. And then the kids can't wait for the parents to die so they can get the parents' stuff. Oh, but the parents got cancer and the government got all the parents' stuff, so now they're stuck. And they don't want the parents anyway. They put them in a nursing home. You know, so we discard people all around us. It's a sociopathic society. Every man for himself. You've got to get by ripping off everybody around you and profiting from all the people around you. You know, turn every aspect of your life into commerce. That's what they've done. And we need to pay attention. So this is what they're doing to the rest of the world. This is freedom. This is democracy. Oh, look, you're living in the jungle. You're all happy. No, that's uncivilized. You've got to do it this way.
Yeah.
We send in the church and the missionaries, and they go and they convert you to the fact that you need to respect authority. You've got to do what it says in this book, or you get in trouble and you go to hell. And then once we've got you all subservient to this religious culture, in come the corporations, and they rape the country. You know, you go to South America, you just got to pull back the corporation signs to see the mission signs beneath them. You know, this is the way they do it. They go out and they just corporatize the entire planet. That's what the New World Order is. It's a global corporation that's been created.
And
the muscle that's being used to create is the United States. So you guys got to pay attention because, you know, it isn't even America doing it. It's the muscle that controls the United States, which is European in cartels, but it's the people of the United States of America that are going to cop the brunt when the world suddenly turns around and slaps America in the face. It's going to be you guys who cop the flak. The guys who actually did it, they'll run off to their bunkers. They'll be safe. They don't care. They got all the gold. They got all the seeds. They've left you with GM crop and Fukushima and the whole polluted reality. You work it out. We'll go and hide down here for a while.
Yeah.
So we need to nip it in the bud before that happens, you know.
Well, that's a tall order, Max. I mean, it's easier said than done, right?
Well, it is, you know. But people, if they look around them, they listen to shows like this, and they simply pay attention, then we can do it. Just start questioning authority. Building strong ties with your neighborhood so you can stand together and question authority. And realize that there are no leaders to this. There is no movement you can join. You know, there are no leaders. There can be no leaders. This is like millions and millions of worms eating their way through the timber of their structure. There's nothing they can do to stop that. We're like white ants, you know, termites, you know. So there is no leader. This is an idea whose time has come. This is the time in history when human consciousness wakes up to what it is. We all wake up to what we are. We wake up to the fact that we are all equal. We are all created equal. No one has any authority over you. No one has any right of ownership over you. This whole system, this 2,000-word, 200-page memos, these are fiction. These are words on paper. They don't mean anything. And not only that, but they were written by public trustees that you employ to do the opposite of what they're doing. If they're writing rules which impede your ability to be you, they're in breach of trust. It's as simple as that. That's not what you employ them to do. Don't they swear to serve the American people when they go to office?
Yeah.
You know,
But holding them accountable, Max, under the current system, it's very difficult to bring any of them to justice as far as I know. So what are you saying? Civil disobedience or what?
Well, I'm saying civil disobedience, but on a mass scale. And the thing is, yeah. I don't want to bring them to justice. I don't care what they did. I just don't want them to inflict themselves on my life, and I won't let them destroy the world around me.
Right.
I'm not interested in taking them to court or anything like that. Just go away. Go away. Go and live somewhere. Or go and live in the slums. Go live on Christmas Island where you put the refugees. Go and live there for a while. See how you like it. I mean, I'm not interested in holding them accountable. I don't care what they did. I don't want to go and go to a court and stand there and gloat because they've been locked up for hundreds of years. I don't care. I just want the world to change. I want the society to go in a different direction it's going in. I just think we all need to stop complying with this system and start doing what is morally right in all that we do. And not what's right for us personally, but just what's right. Just do the right thing in all that you do. Start respecting people around you and don't comply with any law that causes you to do harm or may possibly cause harm to somebody else. Because if a law causes harm, then it's not a law. It's actually breaking the law. It's legislation that some politician has put in place to supersede law and remove law from the planet because there's only one law, and that's do no harm.
Right.
That's what I believe. If we can suddenly do that as a society, as a species, suddenly respect ourselves enough that we can start respecting other people, break down the barriers that we have with our neighbors and in our community, our racial barriers, our social barriers, our economic barriers, all the stuff that we've constructed. They're all constructs. They're all programs. We're all in this together. We're all equal. We've got criminals running the planet. We need to pay attention. They're able to do what we do, what they do, because we pay taxes to them. And when they say jump, we say how high? You know, stop paying your taxes and don't jump. All get together and say, hey, we've realized that you know, your game's up. We see you. We know what you're doing. We've figured it out. We're not going to do this anymore. You know, all the soldiers should come home. All the police should wake up to the fact that they're supporting corporate corruption rather than the people. You know, we're only going to get this through respect. That's what I've been saying on the show for years. You know, we've got to start respecting each other. Once we do that, the whole world could change. And we don't need accountability. You know, they'll be accountable for themselves. If the world just suddenly starts waking up, and we all start respecting each other and helping each other and doing what human beings do naturally, which is be caring, nurturing creatures. This is what we are. These psychopaths that are running the planet, they'll be rejected by the whole world. They won't be able to show their faces anywhere. They'll get plenty of punishment. They'll have to go and scrounge on rubbish tips to survive because we're not going to give them anything or help them or do what they say. You know, the Rothschilds and Obama can stand there and clench his fist and stamp up and down and scream, obey me all he wants. No, I'm not going to obey you. You're nobody. Actually, you've done a lot of bad stuff. Go away. You're a naughty boy. I'll slap you on the wrist. Go and live somewhere else. Go away. I'm not interested.
They have no shame. They really don't have any shame or humanity. They've lost their humanity. It's obvious. And that's why I say, go back to what I said about possession by parasitic entities that are non-physical, how they've literally hijacked the bodies. Are you familiar with Steve Richards?
Steve Richards in Australia here, Holographic Kinetics.
Yes, absolutely.
I know Steve.
Well, I've had him on my show once because people in my audience said, you know, based on what you've been saying now for a few years about these entities, they said, you really need to talk to Steve. So I did, and it was very eye-opening. I never claimed to know everything about these entities, but it was very, very instructive what he told me about the relationships that we enter into with them, whether we know it or not, you know. So we have to, first of all, be responsible, understand that we are responsible for everything that's going on. Like you were saying, Americans clearly are acting irresponsibly by letting these criminals run around and misrepresenting us and doing dirty deeds around the globe like this in our name. I mean, that definitely, it's unacceptable, right?
Well, it is irresponsible, but I mean, you could say, well, they're programmed to be that way, but there comes a time when you think, look, it's in your face, guys. I mean, how much you know, where's your line in the sand? How much more obvious does it have to get, you know?
Well, here's my point though. I don't think you've seen my research. There are, on a nightly or daily basis, there are UFOs coming into Washington, D.C. And over a period of years, I mean, it started, the first documentation was 1850. Up until the present, though, it seems to have increased. The activity is going on. Now, you have a government that's saying that this isn't happening, that these things don't exist, and yet they are coming into Washington, D.C. airspace on a regular basis. To me, that was stinking of a cover-up, like, the mother of all cover-ups, in my opinion. How can you come to a place where you're not even welcome on a covert basis like that over a period of, you know, more than 100 years? How could you be coming there unless there wasn't some agenda that was being served covertly?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know what? I'd like to send you, I'm trying to think how to do it. Do I have your email? I know through your website I can email you, but can you just give me the beginning numbers or letters of your, if I have it, I don't remember where it is.
I've got an email from you in my.
Okay, if you could just reply to it. Reply to that, and then I will send you a digital copy of my second book in particular. I would highly recommend that you read the conclusion first so that you make sense of not only this conversation, but what is historically, what has been covered up. The covert history of Washington, D.C. is shocking. And I say that as a person who has spent now 8 years researching and reporting on that. I didn't ask for that. It sort of fell into my lap. And I wasn't too happy about it. But you know what? Somebody had to do it, and nobody else wanted to do it. And actually, I didn't even want to do it. But it had to be done. It really had. Somebody had to air the dirty laundry. Okay. Fortunately, they did. I didn't suffer too badly for it. I mean, they just tried to scare the hell out of me. Intimidation. Okay. But that kind of didn't work. So, not that I'm overly courageous. I think I'm just more curious than anything. And you know what happens ultimately. Curiosity usually kills the cat, at least in metaphorically. Fortunately, it has, like I said, I'm still here. But so is the problem in Washington, D.C. And I have a feeling it will probably take a full 10 years before everybody knows that there is not only a criminal element in Washington, D.C., but there is a cosmic, a covert extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional dynamic there that needs to be addressed. It really does. I mean, it explains, to me anyway, it is the ultimate answer as to why people, humans, go there and then act inhumanely. It isn't just power per se. It is a power. Like in religious terms, it's called the principality of power, powers of the air, as it were. And that's essentially where these things come from. Now, the other strange thing is we actually have photographic evidence of all this, Max. It's not like it's just me taking people's word for what they're seeing. We actually have photographs, and that's how I got started on this investigation, was a legitimate professional photographer at the Capitol building in July of 2002. He was there taking pictures one night, and suddenly all these UFOs swarmed over the building in the middle of the night. And he has that on 35mm negative. So it's not Photoshop, and it coincides perfectly with what people are saying that they've seen, eyewitness reports as well as radar returns that have been, you know, like I said, it picked up a lot dramatically, I should say, in the 1950s. Our government here thought we were being invaded, and in some level I would have to say that's true, but it didn't start then. They certainly have the advantage over us in some level, but that doesn't mean that they can continue to lord over us. Because if you think about it, they have to remain hidden. That means they do fear us. They fear us knowing that they exist. Because if people, like in the movie The Matrix, if people were to recognize who these creatures really are, you better believe we would unite against them.
Well,
there would absolutely be a movement against them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know myself. I mean, I've seen a UFO myself in broad daylight back in 2001 or 2000, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And broad daylight, obvious UFO, classic textbook UFO, you know, disc, dome on top, dome underneath.
Yeah.
Very, very large, quite off in the distance, but with the amount of atmospheric distortion, I'd say it would have been huge, you know, probably as large as a football field.
Yes.
But it was off over the ocean, and it was a long way away. So I know they're real. Who powers them is another question. Who drives them? It's definitely another question.
But there isn't one. There isn't one answer, though, Max. There's definitely – see, that's the hard part here.
Well, it is. I mean, see, I don't talk about that sort of stuff on the show very much because it just – a lot of people get alienated by it, you know. And I think that once we rein our government in, once we realize that we've got a problem in government, that the world is not what we thought it was, and that we actually have the power to rein this whole system in, should we choose to unite, you know, respect each other and unite, and that all the things that stop us doing that are programs, they're simply programs. I mean, none of it's real. There's no reason why we shouldn't respect each other. There's no reason why we should feel different from each other. I believe that once we do that and we address this situation and rein this government in and create something a little bit more transparent that puts us back on track and leads us back to where we should be, then all of the questions to all these things will become apparent by default.
Once we get that
transparency in there. I also believe we've got a lot of higher senses. There's a lot more to this reality than we believe there to be.
Absolutely.
And once we get the toxins out of the environment, get rid of the electromagnetic radiation, all the wireless technology, get rid of all the fluoride and the toxins out of the food and the water, we'll find that we'll start coming back online. And over a period of a few years, we'll realize that we don't even need government.
Right.
The only reason we need government is to protect us from all the problems that the government creates for us. You know?
Yeah, the best criminals always end up working for the government. I sent you a link to the visual, what they call the photo archive. There's a video as well as still photos and a couple historic movies that were confiscated and classified. Apparently there's quite a whole archive of that, from the 1950s that was the government didn't want anybody to see, that's been gradually leaked out over the years. So, I sent that to you via Skype. Anyway, as I was saying, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and I know especially people who listen to shows like this or use the internet, are finding out that every day that there's just something not right, obviously, with our world, and I don't know what to believe about Fukushima because I'm obviously not there, but I'm seeing so much information coming across the wires every day. I mean, they're saying now it's probably the most life-threatening event that the planet has ever seen. Do you agree with that?
In many ways, I do, because of its potential for... I mean, they don't know how to stop it. It's right on the edge of the ocean. It's much, much, much bigger than Chernobyl. It's pouring about 300 tons of radioactive water into the ocean every day. It's been doing so for 2.5 years. It's completely uncontained. It's still exactly the way it was on day one. They haven't been able to put a concrete sarcophagus over it. And it's 50 meters from the ocean, so it's just pouring waste into the ocean.
Is there anything being done that you know of? And if not, why not?
Well, there's nothing being done. Japan's calling out for international help now. They're admitting that they don't know what to do.
Okay.
Now, you've got to understand, Japan's a very technologically advanced culture.
Yeah, I understand.
They can do just about anything. That's the thing. What can you do with this? What can we do with it? That's the question. I think, you know, the greatest minds on earth need to sit down together. All governments need to stop what they're doing and pay attention to what's going on in Fukushima, because this affects the entire planet. And it's a potentially extinction-level event. As far as animal life goes, I mean, plants mutate. Plants don't mind radiation that much. They'll just change. The earth will change. The earth will handle it. It won't kill the earth. It'll kill us, but it won't kill the earth. The earth will simply go about its business, and it'll adapt. This will just be a new phase for the earth, the radioactive phase.
Oh, God.
And, you know, the plant life will flourish. A lot of insect life will flourish. A lot of animal life will change. A lot of reptile life will simply change. Some of it may flourish. But humans won't. We won't be here anymore. So, And there won't be much life left in the oceans either, probably. Be plant life, but there won't be much animal life left in the oceans. So it could mean the end of all animal life. It is a very, very hazardous event, and it's a very important event. And while it's all going on, we've got people saying, oh, look, forget that. We're just going to go and drop depleted uranium on Syria. We'll just add to the global radiation problem, just in order to keep people safe, of course.
Yeah, right.
So, people aren't paying attention. What are they even discussing war for? What are they even discussing, you know, Hadron Colliders and all the stuff they're talking about? Let's look at this problem, Fukushima. Let's fix this. These are American reactors. These are GE and Westinghouse reactors that are put there.
Yes.
Old
yes.
Phase 1 reactors. So the U.S. should take a little bit of responsibility for this.
Yeah,
and we
just
need
a little.
And apart from that, you can't say, it's Japanese problem and, you know, all the money and this. That's what's holding us back, isn't it? The cost of it. I mean, what is this? You know, this is life on the planet. You're putting an economic value on it. They're saying, it's doing, $2 billion worth of damage to the nearby reefs, you know. How can you even put a dollar value on a coral reef? It's a coral reef. You can't say it's worth $2 billion. It's life. It's a coral reef, for God's sake.
Hey, but Max, look, before that, they were also doing all the nuclear testing in the Pacific.
I know.
I mean, it seems to me that this is deliberate by the powers that be.
Well, it's because they're insane. These are mad scientists. I mean, think about it, the nuclear testing. I mean, you only need to test it once, don't you? Okay, it works. We know it works. We tested it. How many nuclear tests have they done? How many thousands and thousands of nuclear tests have they done? You only got to test it once. We know it works. Okay, it blew up. Great. Don't do anything to me or I'll drop one on you and you'll blow up. We know it works. I tested it. That's it. Done. You know, so they're mad, but they do this stuff anyway. I mean, even think about nuclear tests. The first atomic test that they did when Oppenheimer was developing the atomic bomb, the first ever atomic test that they did, they were not sure whether it wouldn't ignite the atmosphere. They
right.
thought, wow, this is the atom. We're splitting the atom here. Everything's made of atoms. When we split the atom, there's a possibility it could create a chain reaction and ignite the entire atmosphere of the planet. But we'll do the test anyway, you know, because they're mad. They're insane. When they turned on the Hadron Collider, that big collider that they built to see if they could find a Higgs boson, bombarding quarks together to see if they can find a Higgs boson. Like, we really need this. This is all about human development. I mean, this is going to solve all the problems of the world if we find a Higgs boson. So let's spend millions building this huge thing that takes up, you know, three countries or something and start bombarding particles together. Oh, but by the way, while we're doing it, there's just a possibility that when we create a Higgs boson, we could actually create a black hole and suck the entire Earth into it. We just don't know. But we'll do it anyway. Because they're insane. They're mad. They're completely mad. They're mad scientists, and that's just what we've got in control of this system. So it's no good trying to question why they do things. They're psychopaths, and they're completely and utterly insane. Otherwise, they wouldn't do what they do. I mean, normal people don't do this sort of stuff, you know?
Well, again, this is something I discovered. It's not new to me, and it's one of the reasons I was speaking with Steve Richards. I just sent you the link to an article I wrote back in 2011, and I've been updating it regularly as I get new information, but there appears to be some sort of energy parasites that live among us covertly. They're non-physical, but they need negative energy from us in order to survive here. That's one of the reasons I think they're not even from this universe. But in any case, they're here, and this is something they've been doing, is manipulating us, manipulating our minds. Not everybody, but enough of us that we cause harm to ourselves or others. And in the process, there's a negative dark energy that they actually acquire. And it's a big problem. I personally think that explains a lot. You can't just say they're insane. That doesn't really, there's more to it. I mean, you can say that, but it's not really getting to the heart of the matter, in my opinion. So that's just one reason I'm bringing it up. If you haven't seen that work, that's another thing. Let's consider it an extension of what I learned about Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Because I'd run into these creatures, face to face back in 1985 as a young man. I was 24, 25 years old. Anyway, and I didn't know what they were. So now all these years later, as I was doing the conclusion, writing the conclusion to the second book about Washington, D.C., that was 2006, I realized that that possession is something that does occur in Washington, D.C. It's very well known. It was a book and a movie called The Exorcist that took place in, it wasn't just filmed in Washington, D.C. The event actually took place in Washington, D.C. in 1948, which to a 13-year-old boy. And this was at a time when UFO activity was on the rise, and that's when I started to correlate the two. I'm not saying that all aliens are evil or parasitic, because evil, in my opinion, is an infection, just like a dog that has rabies. It's no longer a loving, faithful, friendly pet. It becomes extremely violent, and you can't communicate, and it's, you know, it's a threat. And I see this happening in people, too. So when we say psychopath, to me, it's code for an infection. Evil is an infection by these. Either if it's not this amoeba-like parasite, it's some other form of. I mean, there's different levels to it. And again, I know in Christian terms it would be called demons, but every culture, as you see on the page I sent you, every culture seems to have a name for these entities. And so I'm sure they do exist. Like I said, I found out the hard way. They're real.
Yeah, the Chitahuri in Africa, the Nagas, the Archons people. Actually, I did a show with John Lash recently. I had him on just because there was so much talk about Archons lately.
Yes.
And having read John's book, he putting it in context with the Sapphire Mythos, I thought, okay, well, it can actually be quite empowering, because so many people were writing to me that were in fear about these Archons. I thought, well, it depends on how you look at it.
So, that's right.
I had John on the show to talk about it, and boy, I did a couple lot of flack for that one.
I'm sure you did.
Well, yeah, it's just, you got to look at all possibilities. It is interesting, you know, the concept of mind parasites and the concept, I mean, this exists in Native American culture, it exists in Australian Aboriginal culture, it exists in all cultures.
That's right.
And if you go to South America and you do ceremony, an ayahuasca ceremony, and actually talk to the spirit world, actually access that world, and people may listen to me say that and say, oh, demonology, what's he doing? You know, but no, this is serious stuff. Shamanism and the access to the spirit realm and your higher senses coming online, these are real things. And there's a lot more to human consciousness than what we can perceive in this reality. And there's a lot to suggest that the concept of you know, there's a lot to the concept of mind parasites. There's a lot to the concept of Archons, that there is something that's covertly feeding off the human mind and controlling human mind, and that evil is, in fact, an anomaly. It's not supposed to be part of the human experience.
No, it's not. But I think this is what the movie The Matrix was trying to tell us in a metaphorical sense. Remember, we are the batteries for these machine-like in fact, they actually look very similar.
It's a very difficult concept to suggest to people, the concept of mind parasites. It really is. And just trying to wake people up to the fact that they're living in a paper-based matrix. You know, they are living in a matrix. And it's a paper-based reality. Like you're saying, you've got these 2,000-page documents. I mean, it's a paper-based reality. It's just words. It's just squiggly lines on pieces of paper. It doesn't mean anything. It's not real. No. You can't eat it. It doesn't think. It doesn't have a consciousness. It only has the consciousness that we give it, because we perceive it to be real. That's why the system's there, because we believe the system's real. So we give it our energy. It's just an idea. It's just words on paper. The government doesn't actually exist. You know, there is no such thing as government. Government is just rules written in books. And men go to these buildings, they put on fancy suits, and they go to these buildings, and they do what it says in these books. And if they want to do other things and it's not in the books, then they write it down.
Yeah.
And they can do it because they wrote it down. See, look, it's a law now. I wrote it down. It's got a fancy letterhead. That means I can do that. You've got nothing to do. You can't get out of the path of the oncoming train, because I wrote down here that if you move from those tracks, it's against the law. I have to put you in jail.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So you have to stay there and get squashed. Otherwise, you're a naughty person. You're a criminal. Look, he moved. He's a criminal. He moved out of the path of the oncoming train. He's a criminal. Put him in jail. Lock him in a cage, quick, because he wrote the rule that I wrote down on this piece of paper. That's all government is. It doesn't exist. It isn't real. It's just an idea, you know. So once we wake up to that fact, we realize that all we have to do to step away from it is actually respect each other. Realize that all of the differences that we've got is just programmed responses. You go to the television, what's the television doing to you? What's it doing? What do they call these shows? They call them TV programs. Why do you think they call them programs, folks? I mean, they tell you what they're doing to you. And all you have to do is take off the rose-colored glasses, step back a little bit, and think what your body is, what you actually are, this frequency of consciousness that is inhabiting this biological computer, what you are a perspective of consciousness, seeing reality from your unique perspective that no one else has, and you're absolutely perfect because you're perfect at being you. No one can do that better than you, and that's what you're here to do, obviously, because that's who you are, and that's what everybody else is here to do as well, is to be themselves and to have that perspective. You really see that, and you go, wow. Reality looks completely different from here, and suddenly you can respect yourself and you can respect others. All the barriers break down, and we simply step away from the fiction. You know, it's really that easy if people could just see it. You know, and then the question of who are these parasites? Do they exist? What's going on? Where's it'll all be apparent by default if we simply step away from the system. Like I said, Obama, Joe Biden, these guys can stand there and stomp their fists and clench their fists and scream out, obey me, as much as they want. Yeah. Well, we won't. We don't have to. That's just a silly man standing there screaming because he thinks he owns you. But he doesn't, you know. So, yeah, it's really simple for us to step away from it. But, you know, this is why almost every show I've done, I've spoken about empowerment. And I've spoken about the need for people to understand who and what they are so they can own themselves, stand in the power of themselves. Because then they can respect themselves, and that's how we fix the problem. You know, it's all about the individual knowing themselves and realizing there is no movement to join. You are the salvation you've been looking for. You are what you've been looking for the whole time. You know, we're all looking for someone to come and save us, but we're not prepared to stand in the power of who we are, and that's what will save us, you know.
Right. We become our own saviors and I think we're on an interrupted journey, honestly. One of the things about the article that I sent you the link to is that there's actually pictures there of these particular entities that the Gnostics were, they said there was a reptilian and then there was another one that John typically calls them the Greys, and I disagree. I don't think that's what they said at all. What they said is it looked like a human embryo. And I've got the pictures there that I think substantiate that what they were seeing, what the Gnostic shamans were actually seeing, are these amoeba-like. They're not tiny like amoeba, but they are very similar to amoeba. And I've got pictures of that, too. So the reason I'm telling you this is because not everybody's got the message yet, but it's incredibly empowering when people can actually see their adversary and face them, confront them directly, because that's been part of the problem. The covert nature, just like in military, in warfare, you know, if you have any kind of stealth, just the advantage of a surprise like that over your prey, it just makes it easier for you to, sneak up on them and take advantage. And that's really what I find is part of the problem here is people don't know that there's a problem. They don't – the system – is set up to protect itself. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So and people police themselves as well. People are too scared to think outside of the box because they're scared of what their peers might think of them.
That's right. The implications of it all. But I'm trying. Here's the thing. Ever since I put that out in 2011, and it hasn't been, that's not a very long time ago. Okay. We're talking maybe 2 years. You would not believe how, well, maybe you would. There have been people, literally thousands of people from all over the world, that not have heard me talking about it and seen that particular page with those pictures, and they have written to me. So that's what my next book is about in part, you know, sort of the good, bad, and the ugly. I call it Archons and Angels. But it's these people are all telling me the same thing. They have seen them. They have dealt with them, some very successfully, others not as successfully. But I really think the time is coming, Max, where everybody is going to have an opportunity to know who the oppressor is, who is the master manipulator, and what can be done about it. And if you do nothing, then you've basically you agreed to let them control you.
Well, yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think that once people own themselves, all this stuff will become apparent. I think we really have to reestablish our connection with ourselves. Everybody has to. That's what I've tried so hard to do on the radio show. I'm going to start a project called the Full Circle Project. I wanted to try to get it started this year, but I'm probably won't happen until next year now.
Okay.
But, to try to help reconnect people to themselves, reconnect people to the planet, reestablish people's strength in how they deal with government, how they deal with authority as well. I want to go to South America later in the year and create a documentary there. I want to meet with Ben Stewart in Peru, and hopefully with a couple of other people, hopefully Ken O'Keefe and possibly Rick Simpson as well, and create a documentary down there and use that as the intro to introduce the project and try to help people understand the need to reestablish our connection with the earth, reestablish our connection to ourselves. You know, everything that this society has been designed to do has been designed to disconnect us from the earth and ourselves. And we need to realize the importance of reestablishing that connection. So that's what I'm going to do this year. And hopefully get the Full Circle Project started early next year if I can, a year late, but better late than never.
That's right. That's right. Now, would that be available? You're going to publicize it on your website?
Yeah, I will. I'll be going to South America. I'll get the film hopefully back here and edited and out there and available by mid-January, I'm hoping. So, and that will be to get the project started. So, and you know, we've got to start uniting as a species. We've got to start realizing the power that we have to hold government accountable for their actions. But we're only going to be able to do that by uniting as communities. We need the strength of numbers. You know, we need to respect each other. And we don't need violence to accomplish any of the things we need. All we need is transparency of government so that we can have a government that works simply to manage our infrastructure for us and will lead us back to the point where we don't need government, you know, because we don't. Yes. We don't need government at all. But unfortunately, at the moment, we do, because a lot of people can't look after themselves. So you can't just crash this system. Too many people will suffer. You need to rein this system in and get it back under control by the people and remove all of the toxins from the environment. That's number one, A1 priority. Get rid of all of these toxins, because that will bring us back online, bring our higher senses online. And then we'll start to know really what's going on. We'll start to experience more of reality. And if there is any truth to concepts such as the archons, if these things are really going on, if there really are extra sensory forces that are in control, that are superimposing evil over our consciousness, if there is truth to the tales of the indigenous cultures around the planet, then we will find out.
Darn it, I am trying to add this call.
Okay, what happened then? I just got put on hold.
You there, Robert?
Yeah, okay, good. All right, you guys are both on the... I'm sorry, just a little I'm so slow with technology these days. Yes, that's caller, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, how are you? Is this Ed?
Good. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Hi, Ed, you're on with Max.
Hey, Max, I got to tell you, I've been following your work for a while. Your videos are phenomenal, and I wanted to make a special point to tell everybody that's listening to go to your website and see your phenomenal videos on how to awaken and what's really going on.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate the kind words. I really do.
And, you know, I know you guys were talking about waking people up, and easier said than done, Max. I mean, I've sent so many emails to people about this Syria thing and the nonsense that's being, you know, that's been on the TV with these idiots, McCain, Graham, and Biden, just ranting and raving, and it's just a replay I'm having flashback of the yellow cake thing when Colin Powell was on there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And
it's amazing.
It's totally.
It's theater. I don't know how people can't see it. It's so obviously staged. And even the rebels have even admitted to a very, very well respected, Associated Press reporter, Dale Gavlak, that they were responsible for it. It was chemical weapons that blew up in a tunnel because they didn't know how to handle it. They didn't even actually attack anyone. It was just mishandling of chemical weapons that were provided to them by Saudi Arabia. You know?
And they were manufactured in Britain. That's one of the reasons Britain backed out.
Oh, look, it's unbelievable. You got chemical weapons being supplied by Saudis, all financed by the United States and created by Britain. I mean, what's going on here? Oh, no, we got to go and bomb. We got to go and bomb the people. Unbelievable, you know? Unbelievable.
Last week there was a big train movements of military equipment going through New Orleans that were just miles long. And it makes you wonder, you know, if they're just gearing up for this anyway, or, you know, there was a talk about that FEMA region, Area 3, bunch of stuff going on there that they're expecting in, I believe it's November, and that's when Comet Ison's going to be very close to the Earth. So, I don't know, there's a lot going on right now.
Oh, there is. Which way was the military equipment going? Is it going towards the ocean, or?
Well, I'm not sure. That they didn't specify.
You didn't know whether it was going to get loaded on ships or whether it was going in to be used domestically?
That's the big question. I'm not sure. Anyway, you know, there's a big domestic buildup because they're expecting something in the FEMA 3 region, which is Virginia, Washington, D.C., Delaware, Maryland, and Pennsylvania, I believe.
Well, they're really pushing for it. They're really, really pushing for it. I mean, I feel so much for my American brothers and sisters at the moment because you guys are really right on the front line. And, you know, you've still got a chance now to rein all this in. You know, if the people will simply unite and stand up peacefully, you can still do this. You've still got the numbers to do it, and they haven't got full control yet. You know, they almost have, but you can still do it. But my God, people have got to wake up and really pay attention to this.
Well, how are they going to wake up? I mean, they're too busy watching the television and playing with their iPhones or smartphones.
Yeah, I know, man. I know. Mean, I've been trying for 6 years, brother. I've been speaking directly to the American people, and it is. It's very difficult, and it's getting beyond a joke. And like I was saying earlier in the show, it's going to go very badly for the American people with what's coming from their government or from the rest of the world when the rest of the world decides to retaliate. Because it's going to happen eventually. You know, America is going to, United States is going to pay for some of the damage it's doing. And unfortunately, the people are going to cop the brunt.
I know. And what they've done in my name and Robert's name and everyone who's awake. I mean, we had a holiday this weekend. Everyone's, not everyone, but quite a few people put out the American flag. And I haven't put out my American flag in 20 years.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a shameful thing at the moment, really. It's a shame to see what America's become. It really is. And, yeah, you can't blame the people because they're programmed to think and act the way they do. But it gets to the point with what's going on in Syria now, it gets to the point where you think, well, it's so in front of your face. How much are you prepared to take? Are you just plain stupid? I mean, how can we tell you that, I mean, if you can't see the writing on the wall that's right in front of you, what can we do to save you? Are you even worth saving? I mean, how much can we give to you people, you know?
Right.
It'd be so simple for you to fix it, all of this problem. You've got to realize
that America
is not exporting freedom. It's exporting death and destruction, and you've got to pay attention and stop this happening, you know?
Well, they did that with that PNAC agreement, you know, Project for a New American Century, where they have all these countries on their hit list. And they've been just going country after country after country.
I know, and the document's right there for everybody to go and read. It's right there.
And that's exactly right. And nobody wants to see them. What are you going to do, hit people over the head with a stick? I mean, my friends are quickly defriending me because I'm trying to wake them up, and I'm trying to do it gently, and, I'm losing friends.
Yeah, I know, man.
You know, they'd rather not hear. They'd rather put their head in the ground. I feel like I'm living in a sea of mannequins.
Yeah, I know. It's very difficult. You know, I can say to people, maybe they should travel. Just go and travel a bit. Go down to South America. Go and see what's happening down there. Go and check it out. Go to Palestine. Go to Gaza. I did. That's where you're all heading. You know, the world is turning into Palestine. The way of Palestine will be the way of the world. Checkpoints and walls. This is where we're going, folks. You know, you got to pay attention. Don't think it can't happen to the United States, because it is happening to the United States.
It's been, I remember like 5 years ago, I sent out the 10 steps of fascism, you know, to people, and that they were all giving me like, well, what are you talking about?
But look,
I said, look around you.
Look, it's coming to a head though. People are waking up. I mean, look what just happened in Britain. The whole parliament said no to Cameron. Cameron started his warmongering to, we've got to go in and back Obama, we've got to go and protect the people. And the whole parliament said, no, we'd like to see some evidence first of wrongdoing. Because they know. There was documents leaked in January that said the United States was going to stage a false flag chemical attack in Syria.
Yeah.
And they've just done it. You know, and the Syrians themselves, the rebels themselves, have admitted responsibility for it. It's reported everywhere except the United States. You know? And
that's right.
The whole world knows. And the United States go, oh, we'll go and do it without the rest of the world backing us because we want to do the right thing, you know. The rest of the world knows it's the wrong thing.
Those rebels have gotten a lot of material from us, especially during Libya. Once we were done in Libya, it was shipped out to Syria. It's one of the reasons that Benghazi was such a debacle. They had to cover it up because it led back to, the machinations that were involved in Syria was directly connected to Libya, just like in Egypt, and before that, Iraq. And, I mean, good God.
Everybody knows. The whole world knows. The only people who don't know are those Americans who are still stupid enough to swallow what the mainstream media is telling them, or still programmed enough. I shouldn't say stupid. Well, you know?
Yes,
I
right.
know, but look at our elections, you know. We have two choices, shit or shit with gravy. That's the choices. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not giving my power away. I didn't vote. And I haven't voted in quite a while. Because I refuse to give my power away to these idiots.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
But and God help the fleets that are out there. If they have some of those Russian-built missiles, you know, I mean, the S-300 missiles are damn near unstoppable.
Yeah, well, you know, like, yeah, if things go bad, go pear-shaped, I mean, none of the world supports what the United States is doing in Syria. Even the British Parliament does not support the actions of the British Prime Minister. And this is a first that they would do that and vote against him the way they did. And you're going to find, I don't think that Obama's going to get congressional approval. I really don't, unless he really pressures them that you have to do this, or it's going to be martial law. You know,
I heard over the weekend on the political talk shows that it's going to be very close, but they expect it to pass by just a few votes. And the way they do this is not by rational, sane thinking, but by twisting arms, by threatening, by blackmailing. That's how they get it through.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, what's got to happen is the people of the United States, you've got to put pressure on your local politicians and say that you even go out to your neighborhood and start collecting signatures for a mandate, a people's mandate, not a petition, but a mandate. We the people hereby mandate that you, our elected representative, do the following, carry out the following action. And you've got to seek for impeachment of the executive branch. Anybody who supports this, you know. You know, just, and say, look, this is what we got to do. And if you're having an upcoming election, go to a politician and say, we'll only vote for a politician that's willing to sign an affidavit saying they'll impeach these people. You know, they will take action against these people. You've got to start doing it from the ground up. I mean, how many people are you going to get to do it? I don't know. But, even collect information about how the rebels have admitted that it was them and that it was Saudi weapons by a respected, you know, Associated Press reporter. You know, there's all sorts of evidence to say that this is not what the government is saying, and that there is no reason for the United States to intervene in Syria. And in fact, the United States is largely responsible for what's going on, you know, because they're funding the rebels, and they're not rebels, they're Al-Qaeda, you know?
Yeah, the United States is being controlled by who?
Yeah, well,
right. You know.
Right. European banking cartels, brother. European,
that's right.
The United States has been controlled by Europe and the Vatican and, you know, Zionist influences for a very, very long time.
We
and
have way too Vatican, many.
The Vatican and Zionism, and it's all together. People differentiate between these things. It's all the same thing. It's all different arms of the same thing, you know.
That's right. I think we should strip Obama of the Nobel Peace Prize.
He doesn't care about that.
Well, the Nobel Peace Prize is a Rockefeller propaganda invention anyway, so.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Window dressing.
I gave him the Peace Prize right as soon as he got elected because they were going to send him out to wage lots and lots of war, and they wanted to give him a little bit of credibility.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoy your work, Max. I've lost a little touch with you. I used to visit your website quite a bit, and can you tell us a little bit more about your radio show?
My radio show is called Surviving the Matrix. It's on American Voice Radio. I've been offered a show on David Icke's new TV station he's opening, so I'm thinking of switching Surviving the Matrix over to that as well. Which means, I mean, I'd still be on American Voice as a podcast, and I'll do it on David's television network, and I'll put it on YouTube as well. It's just another network, and just another branch to get it out to people. But you'll always find everything I do on thecrowhouse.com. It's always
and
there.
Are your shows archived?
They're all there, the radio archives. There's radio shows there going back as far as 2008.
Wow.
Great. Six films all there. Everything that I do is all on the Crow House. There's hundreds and hundreds of links. If you go to the articles archives, it's all alphabetical. There's hundreds of links that have been put there over the years. There's over 1,000 pages on the Crow House. There's a lot of information there. It's all free. There's nothing there for sale. You won't find any ads. You won't find anything to buy. It's all for free. If you can make a donation to anybody, it would be great, but I know it's really, really tight for people at the moment, so.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's all that
Well,
keeps
thank
me.
You so much, Max, for everything you do, and you too, Robert.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
Thanks,
Robert,
for calling in.
For the kind words.
And I'll enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Ed.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Damn it. I'm sorry. Did I just hang up Max again?
Oh, I'm still
okay,
here.
Sorry. I am really struggling. Sorry. I don't know what is wrong with me. Well, actually, I do. I think I'm a little depressed. My son is moving out of the house. He's a teenager. And I'm having separation anxiety.
Yeah. Kid going out into the wide world. It's a difficult time.
It is. We'll get through it. It's not the end of the world. It's just a new beginning. So,
that's what we do in our culture. We're trained to have our kids leave, and the kids are trained that they want to leave. They want to get out on their own.
Yeah.
In many other cultures, the family would simply build a little guest house on the side for the children to move into, you know?
Yes.
And then, when the parents get old, they'll move into the guest house and give the main house to the kids, you know?
I know. My wife's Chinese, and so, yes, her expectation was that he was gonna stick a little closer to home. And he's not that far away. It's just that, you know, we only have one child, so it's especially for me, because I'm a stay-at-home dad. I spent a lot of time raising him, and it's harder for her emotionally. It's harder for me mentally to wrap my mind around the fact that I'm not the doting dad anymore. So anyway, that's just part of my life's path right now. I do appreciate this show, though, because I feel like this is a cyber tribe, and I'm sure you have your own cyber tribe, and that we're linking up. This was, in fact, like I said, I was encouraged to speak to you by people in my audience. You know, that's I just didn't know about you, but I didn't know about Steve Richards either. And so I appreciate when people in this audience give me leads like that or encouragement to link up. with people like yourself. And
well, yeah, it's all about unity, brother. It really is. I've gone around the world trying to link up and create as much unity as I can. It's very difficult to do in a lot of the alternative research community, unfortunately. Many people have their own agendas, you know.
That's for sure. That is absolutely true, Max, and it's tragic. But again, I think this has been part of the manipulation is divide and conquer.
Oh, absolutely.
At all costs.
Okay? Absolutely.
And that's the only reason
There's a lot of that in the alternative research movement, brother.
It's in all group form, though. That's the thing. You know, it's not just like one group is divide and conquer. It's all groups have been infiltrated and divided by various. But it's all for the same purpose, is to keep us. Whoever the dark side is, really, and I think it's multi-level. They don't want us to unite because they know that we're much stronger. They can't afford to be exposed. That's why I've been sort of bringing it up to you repeatedly. I know there's people in this audience who are tired of me talking about it, but it's not an excuse for a person's bad behavior by any stretch of the imagination. But it's like if your dog has rabies, do you now hate the dog? No.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Do you ignore it? No. I mean, if you could cure it, would you? Of course. I mean, I don't think putting a bullet through the dog's head is really, you know, I mean, that's kind of been so far. That's the only treatment, is to destroy the animal. That's the way they put it.
Exactly. This is what I say about why I'm not interested in vengeance against these people. I don't care what they did. You know, I just care what we do. I don't care what anybody did. I care what we do from this point. We're aware that the problem exists now. What are we going to do about it? We can sit here and point the finger as much as we want. But unless we've got a workable plan for the future, I don't care. Bring these people along. Maybe they'll be cured. Maybe they'll work it out. If they can't, then they'll be discarded. Yeah. They'll be their own punishment.
That's right, because they're stuck in their own personal hell. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Because, you know, I've seen this. I've seen this, Max, where, honestly, everything has been provided for us. We're really supposed to just be taking care of each other, obviously taking responsibility for oneself initially. But I do think that we have been led astray. It's an interrupted journey. This was a paradise planet. Are you familiar with Dr. Jonathan Gray? He's another Aussie down in the...
Look, I'm not. I'm sorry.
He's a very fundamentalist kind of guy, but he has written some interesting books, fascinating books as an archaeologist. He's considered a maverick, very much a maverick. But he's written this one book called How to Kill a Paradise Planet. And this was a beautiful planet at one time. It still is compared if you look at other worlds or the moon. But it was much, much, much greater than it is now. The destruction, in my opinion, was all deliberate, again, by the forces of the dark side. They didn't want this world, this garden, this soul garden, to succeed, to success, you know, to grow souls, as it were, because I don't think this is it. This is not the end of the journey by any stretch of the imagination. As you said, consciousness is everything, and that we really are, as seeds of light, we are here to mature our consciousness to a higher and higher level of creativity. That's because everything, in my opinion, is consciousness. Consciousness, energy, and matter are all the same things, same thing at different frequencies.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, the fabric of the universe is conscious energy itself.
Yes.
This is my understanding of the very fabric of the matrix itself is conscious.
Right.
Everything is consciousness. Of course it is.
Right. Yeah. Right, and it has to be symbiotic with itself. So this is why I think that this is an aberration. Wherever this parasitic energy or mind comes from is truly alien in that regard. You know,
well,
in the 50s...
It's an anomaly, it is. It has to be, because like you say, it's got to work in unison. If everything is conscious, and consciousness is the energy, the fabric of the universe, then the very fabric that binds it all together would be compassion. You know, because it has to be in compassionate harmony with each other. I mean, any physical object has to be in compassion for itself for it to exist. If you can think of it emotionally, you know what I mean?
Well, one of the things I understand is our government, specifically the American military government, was approached by benevolent extraterrestrials who offered to assist us in our along our path. And that help was rejected because one of the contingencies that they allegedly had was you must terminate all nuclear programs. And they said, because we have seen where this leads to, and there's no point in us helping you if you're going to go down a dead end, down a dead end street, literally. Mm-hmm. So this was rejected again because at the time, and I don't know how long this has been going on, but I suspect it's quite some time that the manipulation by these interdimensional beings that are parasitic, they literally have taken over the minds of not everybody, but enough of, especially those who we could call leaders of our society. They are under the influence. So, again, it doesn't excuse their behavior, but I think it gives a clearer explanation or a more complete explanation for some of the, what we would consider insane
behavior. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It could also be possible that it's comforting to think that way.
You know, it may be.
It's an off-world force. We're not responsible, you know.
Well, no. I never said that.
No.
I never said we're not responsible because here's the thing. And this is what Steve Richards said, I thought was very telling. We are, whether we're aware of it or not, our intention opens the door to the agreement, which leads to the manifestation.
Yeah.
So everybody enters into a contract. It doesn't matter if you're aware of it or not. You're still responsible for it, and that's what I found very empowering about speaking with him. It was extremely clear. I mean, extraordinarily sobering, Max, to speak with somebody like that. He didn't sugarcoat it at all. He was extremely blunt, not in a mean way either. He was just speaking the truth.
Well, yeah, and this is ancient Aboriginal understandings as well.
Yes, right? Yes.
And he's quite an amazing character. Actually, when I was in England, one of his mentors or one of his or
students.
Someone who he mentored, one of the
yes.
The girls that he taught, a girl called Jacinta, was a very dear friend of mine from Australia. She happened to be in London when I was there. Drove me
really?
Around a lot. She was practicing holographic kinetics in London. Uh-huh. It is quite interesting. You see, what I say is that all of this will become apparent. See, often
right.
when a lot of people look at this and they think about off-world and they think about whether there is a predator or whatever, they tend to think, oh, well, if it's the Archons, if there's a predator, if it's a mind parasite, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, and they
Well, that's not true, though.
I know it isn't, but a lot of them, they do. They go into fear mode. That's why I had John Lash on, because
yes.
I wanted them to think, well, if this is happening, then there's another side to the story. If you look at it within the context of the myth, and if you really look at the Nagamani writings, the myth seems to be a big part of it.
Yes.
So if you're going to look at the Archons, you should look at the myth.
Of course.
And if you do, you'll find it's actually quite empowering information. And that's why I had him on, so people can look at it from that respect. So I think if you're going to be talking about mind parasites, you really need to be putting it in context so that people find the information empowering, because we've got a danger of people locking down and getting this information and really shutting themselves down to it. This is what even with my last film, Transformation, where I talked about nanotechnology and the stuff that is actually going on with geoengineering. I tried to be very, very delicate with it because it's a very, very unsettling thing to bring to people. And a lot of people found the film very, very unsettling. And I tried to warn them. And I tried to gently ease them into it. And there was a lot more that I could have said that I didn't say in the film. I tried to just give them a broad overview of it, but enough to at least generate a bit of concern so they might want to look into it. But it's a fine line, isn't it, bringing this information to people and how you go about it in a way that doesn't send them into lockdown. Because, obviously with what you're dealing with people who are already very awake.
Yeah.
Someone who was completely locked into the Matrix couldn't come to your information and they'd go, oh no, this is out there. This is Twilight Zone stuff, you know? So,
well, especially, Max, when it happened to me in 1985 and I tried to explain it to people, I didn't even have the proper context. to have a clear conversation about it like we are now. Okay. And the reason I bring it up is because, first of all, people need to know. They have the right to know. And also, as I said before, being in fear, living in fear, or justifying violence or any kind of greed or corruption, that's feeding into the Archon. What they need from us, okay, is to behave badly, to feel badly, so that they can thrive. And so by exposing them slowly, and actually a lot quicker than I'd expected, when I, you know, for a long time I stopped talking, I wasn't going to speak about it anymore because people, like you said, they reacted badly to it. And I understood that. But now that I have the photographs of them, and especially in that article, ultimately what's going to become a book. That's how my whole thing, investigation in Washington, D.C. started. It was just one article with the photographs were taken in July 2002. And then what happened is afterwards, there was all this information that came across my desk that snowballed. And ultimately, that's how I wrote the first book, which led to the second book, which led to my awareness that these things are truly existent. It's not a myth. They do exist. Of course, we can speak about it in mythological terms, but they're absolutely real. They would like us to believe that they're not. That's one of the advantages they have over quite a few people. But the tide is turning. I say to you and this audience that the tipping point is coming very, very rapidly.
Well, it'll be interesting to say, brother.
Yes, it will. So, again, I appreciate you being very patient with me. I promise I will send you a link to this show if you'd like. I do archive these shows. And I appreciate it if you keep me posted on the, what did you call it, the project you're doing again? What was the name of it?
The Full Circle Project.
Full Circle Project. I feel that that's very important. And as you make progress, I would like to help you publicize it through whatever means.
Yeah, I just want to bring in anything I can find to get involved to empower communities, you know, and we'll bring it to whichever communities we can. I want to be able to even get tree planting, local reforestation programs going wherever we go. I want to be able to have talks. I want to be able to get a method of, I figure if we're doing tree planting, then that will give us an opening to local council. And the mayor's going to want to come and big note himself because we're planting trees, you know.
Yeah.
Which will give us an opportunity to maybe sit on stage and talk to the mayor in front of the crowd about things such as trust agreements and the actual role of government. You know, it'd be a bit of an ambush for them, but do it politely and plant that seed in the minds of people.
Yes, absolutely.
Get empowerment back into the community. And I want to also feature local and indigenous music and crafts and culture and trees and, you know, really feature the local culture wherever we go. And the need to return to shamanistic ways and more natural ways of doing things, to realize that everything that's been brought to us by academia and science is actually the alternate way of doing things. What they give you is mainstream medicine. This is alternate medicine. Natural medicines that we had for years, we weren't sick the way we are now. We didn't have all these diseases. I mean, modern medicine has cured a few things, a couple of things, not a problem. But most of what it's done is create sickness. And it's an alternate medicine. It's even hijacked the word alternate. You know, because natural medicine is natural and scientific medicine is an alternate way of doing things to what we've done for centuries.
Absolutely.
So we need to reestablish these things and start reestablishing natural ways and realizing that we need communities that are going to benefit mankind and nurture our creative expression. That's what we're here to do, is to express ourselves creatively and experience the art of our lives. So I want to try to bring this back to, bring us full circle back to that, back to where we should be. That's what
sounds
the project
wonderful.
Was about, you know?
Yeah, I'm all for it. It sounds wonderful. You know, when you talk about medicine, though, I do remember another thing Steve said was that everything has consciousness, and that would include the drugs that people put in their body. There is a certain level of consciousness. And, okay, you might say, well, you can clearly see it manifest in what we call side effects.
Oh, yeah.
This is programmed, literally, a level of consciousness. You know how consciousness can program water to take different shapes based on the frequencies that it receives?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so drugs that we ingest or inject are also crystalline, part of the crystalline matrix that actually has a certain amount of consciousness programmed into them. So if you think about it, if you really look at it that way, through that template, you can see that this is intentional. What's being done to us is absolutely I know you'd mentioned it before. I'm just reaffirming what you had said earlier. They're doing this intentionally to us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, anyway, again, your website is thecrowhouse.com. Max Egan, very much appreciate the work you're doing. And, again, I can't thank you enough for spending time with me. Despite my technical difficulties, I do very much appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Robert. Happy to come on anytime and keep up the good work. I'll check out your website and your stuff.
Okay, great. Thank you and take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.